definitely a younger demographic. So around, you know, 68-70% of our people are digital natives. I joke that I'm a digital native, but I remember rewinding audio cassettes with, you know, a Bic pen. So the people who are coming into the organization and who are frankly driving it and will be the leaders of it have a very different set of experiences that they have had their entire lives that shape the way they think about how they interact, not just with technology, but frankly with each other and how they collaborate.
Hi, I'm Paul Miller, and this is Digital Workplace Impact, where we investigate and explore the ideas, practices, and people that are impacting the new digital worlds where we all work. Digital Workplace Impact is produced by the Digital Workplace Group, a strategic partner and boutique consultancy covering all aspects of the evolving digital workplace industry through membership, benchmarking, and boutique consulting services. And if you'd like more information, visit digitalworkplacegroup.com. So one of the things I increasingly enjoy doing is taking a couple of people who appear at one of our DWG member meetings and kind of commandeering them and saying, that was fantastic. What you shared was really amazing. And I want to get some time to record a podcast episode. So I did that last week at WeWork's offices in Soho in New York. And the two people who captured my attention, amongst others, at the meeting were Jessica Woods, who is the lead product designer for EY, Ernst & Young, around employee digital experience, and also Chase Moore. And Chase is a product strategy and innovation leader at EY. And they did a really great presentation at the meeting, talking about the way that they, as an organization, had thought about new ways and implemented new ways of engaging and connecting with the ever younger and ever more digitally connected people who are coming in to EY. So it was a really interesting conversation. Jessica is based in LA. Apparently she's learning to surf there, which is interesting because she originally comes from London. And Chase is based in the Cleveland office for EY. And I think they make a great team. So do enjoy the episode. I think there's a lot of really interesting experiences and quite innovative experiences that EY is constructing around thinking in real time about the way that this younger demographic works. Instead of sort of coming in with sort of set ideas, they've been thinking about this really differently, and I much enjoyed the conversation. It's been great to be here in Soho in New York at the WeWork offices here. And we've had a really terrific day. And I was really struck by presentation you did, Chase and Jessica, about this topic of engaging younger digital natives. But just before we get into that, Chase, perhaps you can just explain what your role is at EY.
Sure. Yeah, and I've had the opportunity to be at EY for a long time and have a lot of different roles, but you know, where I am today, I actually oversee a team of product managers and designers who oversee the strategy and the innovation for our flagship knowledge management product that we use internally. If you think about a company like EY providing professional services across a very complicated set of different sectors and different businesses, being able to foster the knowledge that we already have and leverage that to help our clients solve their most challenging issues is really fundamental. So what our team does is we try to deliver technology products that help keep them better connected and really prevent from kind of reinventing the wheel every single time. I think there's a quote at some point where it was, if HP knew what HP knows, they'd be unstoppable. I'm probably brutalizing that.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. And Jessica, what's your role in this?
Yeah, so I am, a digital native. I'm new to EY, and I work as a product designer actually in Chase's team. It's been an interesting journey, kind of looking at the kind of from an innovation perspective, internally, how we can go about and improve the experiences for our kind of younger demographic employees now.
So what does product design mean within EY? Because if I think of product design, I don't really think of a management consulting company.
So I guess I'm not primarily client facing. Product design within my team is kind of being embedded with the product managers, product owners, development, and kind of solving problems for our users who are primarily employees of EY. We have various methods from workshops and design thinking stuff to more of a nitty-gritty kind of tactical product day-to-day kind of development changes. And just kind of being there as a consultant kind of basis as well, if internal employees have questions. And I do a lot of user research too, so working and talking.
I mean, if you think about somebody flying an airplane, the positioning of all of the controls is extremely important for the way that they operate in that job. If we think about our people at EY, they're having to help navigate a complicated landscape of client issues and helping them, solve various different types of problems. We're trying to design really meaningful digital experiences for our people so that they can navigate that landscape. So even though it's not a knob in an aircraft, designing products that help them, either find somebody else who has expertise in a certain area and being able to make those connections, build those communities, that's really what we're trying to do.
So this idea that there's a changing demographic in the workforce, I mean, we've had digital natives for a while, and I guess you're both digital natives, and then there's kind of changing within the digital natives, and EY, what was the problem that EY kind of saw that it wanted to address?
I don't know that we saw a problem per se, but we were approaching this topic of revamping our digital experience for our people, and I think we wanted to really understand what are those needs. And when we look at our business, we have as many businesses do, a lot of digital natives, and that trend will continue to grow. So being appreciative of that dynamic, making sure that we're designing experiences that meet that need is important. We tend to think about product design and good product being the kind of, as Jessica and I were just talking about before we joined this room, it's at the intersection of what technology can do, what is the strategy of the organization, but also what are the user needs. And being able to hit that sweet spot in the center that balances those three factors, I think is really important. And that user centricity point comes back to, who are the users that we're designing this for? What are they trying to do, as opposed to what do we want them to do?
And how many people are in EY, and what's the average age, and is it getting younger? I mean, what's the, you're thinking about a population of people.
Yeah, it's a good question. We're definitely a younger demographic. So around, 68-70% of our people are digital natives. And that is going to increase. We really predict over the next couple of years that will really shift and be mostly people that are Gen Z. So, people born in the 1990s into the early 2000s. So it's definitely a younger demographic, people who really grew up with digital technologies. I joke that I'm a digital native, but I remember rewinding audio cassettes with, a BIC pen. So You know, the people who are coming into the organization and who are frankly driving it and will be the leaders of it, have a very different set of experiences that they have had their entire lives that shape the way they think about how they interact, not just with technology, but frankly with each other and how they collaborate.
And Jessica, what do you think this sort of younger demographic is looking for from an organization like EY? Because presumably they come in thinking, well, I'm going to work on interesting projects, I'm going to get interesting client assignments. What is it they're expecting from the technology, the tools that they're using?
I think we're expecting things to happen a little bit quicker than what we're usually what other people are used to. I think that kind of instant, I don't want to wait 10 seconds for a page to load, you know, I'm going to go somewhere else. I think we're a little bit more distracted than previous generations. So our attention is shifting across all these different platforms that are now available to us. Mm. And I'm not sure that's necessarily a good thing, but it's happening. And I think we're just kind of expecting you to kind of know me as well. So know who I am, know what I need. I'm probably quite biased because I've come from a design and research kind of background, and I invest in that. But that kind of expectation that I'm seeing something that might be different to someone else, I think that is kind of something that we're kind of used to now.
So what would be an example of something that would frustrate somebody, and what would be an example of something that would really please somebody?
Well, a frustration, I guess, just from some of the projects we work on is, you know, if I'm entering a search, I wouldn't expect it to take more than a couple of seconds for me to see my results of that search. And I'll probably get quite frustrated, or I'll go elsewhere if I don't see if I don't see something. There's also a level of, is that item relevant to me as well? So... and so it would be delightful if I, you know, if I'm looking for something and I see it there, just so I can get, if I can get my job done quickly and get out again, actually, then that's kind of a win from.
So is it that people in this sort of younger demographic, which is what we're talking about, and I can absolutely see why EY wants to be progressive and innovative in this area, is it that if you kind of mess up, you get criticized, but if you get it right, people just go, yeah, that's kind of what I expect. I mean, is it a field without praise and appreciation?
It's a good question. I think you know, everybody comes to work every day wanting to make an impact. I don't know that that's different with a younger demographic. What I think might be different is, you know, that responsiveness that people have come to it, you know, expect in almost everything, not just the speed at which the results come up on the screen, but the speed at which they can actually deliver a solution. So I think there's an impatience, maybe is the wrong word for it, but I'll use that anyway, with the younger demographic to get to that answer quickly.
So just give me an example of something that you've developed or done that you really feel is kind of representative of this new... more interactive, more effective world that you're trying to create, and maybe what the process was that you went through to get there.
You know, maybe one of the best examples I could think of is having a focused experience around name-based searches.
What's a name-based search?
So searching for, you know, somebody based on their name. So looking.
Oh, right. Okay.
I'm looking to find out like who your executive assistant is.
Yep.
That type of an experience is one that we found that actually a lot of our people are doing. We're looking at data on what people search on in one of our tools, and we actually found this kind of surprised me. Maybe it shouldn't have, but 25% of the searches done in our system contained the name of a person.
Right.
So a lot of what our people are actually looking for, and maybe this is why it shouldn't be surprising in a large professional services organization, is looking for people that they want to connect with. They've heard by, you know, word of mouth that, oh, this is the person you talk to about blockchain, or this is who knows the latest about, you know, RPA technology. Go talk to them. And being able to really build a experience within our tool set that tailors for that type of a search experience is something that I think we've found was very successful. We actually show a little result block that gives name-based results within our search context. So, you know, that type of experience of getting them to the type of thing that they're looking for quickly.
One of the things I've often heard relative to searching on people and expertise is that unless it's LinkedIn, people won't update their information and so on. How do you overcome that?
That's a great question, and I wish I knew the full answer to it, because that's, if you have a rich database of information about people, then it's really easy to have, you know, your network of who you know doesn't have to be limited based on, you know, the people you've had interactions with. You could actually simply search and find who are all the people. I think what we've learned is bringing in more information that you don't have to enter manually is the key. So what data can we take that we know about your interactions and kind of organically build a profile of your expertise? You know, you've joined, you know, the company, but then you've also done work on these types of projects. All of that data sits within systems. Is there a better way for us to aggregate that information and kind of build a profile that we're kind of co-curating with you is the key. So that's at least what we've seen so far. But it is a challenge to get people to do that.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that I was going to sort of attempt an answer at my own question, which was a bit similar, which is if we're relying on people to, inverted commas, update the information, then that's not the way we're going. We're expecting the systems to increasingly be aggregating data, assembling data, amplifying things, showing who you're connected to. I mean, let's face it, if I said to you, who's in your network, Jessica, you've probably got an idea who you think's in your network, but it's probably not. It's quite an interesting question. There's probably a much wider network that we've each got and quite a different network.
Different types of networks as
well. Yeah.
Because we did some research recently and there was this concept of there's my personal network, there's my professional network, there's my, my kind of what LinkedIn does with the first, second, third level kind of stuff. There's definitely different.
And are people interested when they're searching on people too? It's like, do they really care whether you're inside EY or whether it's outside? Because it to some extent, the knowledge of EY is partly the people within EY, but it's also the networks that they have around them.
Yeah, I think one of like EY's mantra is your relationships and kind of building those communities. That's part of our job, is to help build that community. It's an interesting kind of challenge. I think another piece of information that came from some research we did on our profiles that we have, it was that LinkedIn. Everyone's kind of using LinkedIn as their base kind of CV, if you like. Like the concept of the CV as a document and all of that kind of has totally changed, and they're kind of using LinkedIn as their base now. So they wanted it to integrate with LinkedIn and all of this stuff. It was just interesting the way things have changed from that.
Yeah, we've spoken with some of the people in our business, and one of the things that they're trying to do as they grow their career is kind of stack the deck in their favor. So, you know, having the ability to, you know, find out who a particular leader is in an area of the business that strikes their interest, and then actually be able to figure out, well, how can I get introduced to that partner or that senior leader, you know, to get aligned with some of the work that they're doing. So, you know, being able to kind of understand who's connected to who and who you might have in common is becoming a common use case that we see that we maybe wouldn't have anticipated, right? I mean, I'm looking for somebody who's an expert on topic A, you know, clearly something that came to mind, but figuring out how I then get connected and introduced, because I'm not simply going to send an email to this partner directly. I might go through it through a more indirect means, is also something that we've been learning.
And does the approaches that you've taken affect EY's ability to attract talent, retain talent? Or don't you know?
I guess it's a hard question to answer. It's a good question. I don't know that we know yet how effective that approach has been or not. But I do anticipate if people have an experience at EY that they've, you know, felt like they've been able to get well connected and establish a good network, that we actually hope that lives on and that they become part of the alumni system that we have. You know, and possibly come back. You know, one of the things I found interesting about EY, and we refer to these people as boomerangs, you know, people who've left the organization and have had another chapter of their career and then, you know, come back to share great insights that they've gained from other places that they've worked. So I guess that's a roundabout answer to say I'm not sure, but we hope.
No, I mean, it makes absolute sense. The more effective you can be, the easier it is to get things done. I mean, what strikes me in the environment you're trying to create is that your ability to get to work on interesting projects. I mean, let's say you want to work in South America, and you then sort of think about, well, who's working in Mexico, and how do I get connected? Oh, so and so's working that, I've got some information, I've worked on that particular client. It gives you a chance to connect. So how do you decide which sort of aspects of your digital workplace that you're going to focus on and improve?
It's a great question. You know, there's so many different things you could focus on. How is it that you prioritize, you know, the what? And there's a few different things that we do. One is we've established these kind of, we call them sounding board groups, who we go to on a regular basis with different concepts. User research is a huge aspect of what we're doing as well. So making sure that, you know, before we do anything from a prioritization standpoint, that we're actually going through a process of vetting the concepts with users. And then I think you still, at the end of the day, need to do a prioritization of, you know, what is the effort and what is the anticipated business impact of some of these things. You know, I think there's an age-old adage that, you know, 80% of the things that you build won't be used, only 20% are. So making sure that we're really intentional about, you know, what are the things that we're hearing from our people, what are areas where we find either high pain and high frequency is one way of looking at it. Or where are there areas where there's just a tremendous amount of impact, and even if the effort is high, we want to take, you know, that as a best bet or a big bet, and try to invest in
what
and
would
tackle
be,
that.
What would be examples of those things?
Well, certainly the high frequency, high pain items of, you know, it takes me like 20 clicks to get to a system to complete a task is one. So investing in making that much easier seems to add value. Bigger bet ones, you know, taking something that is actually, you know, not something that the user would think, oh, I'm going to do this in a system, and kind of preparing a proof of concept around it and seeing how people react to it has been an approach that we've taken. And I'll give an example. So we were going through and we were interviewing our users, and we were testing concepts of how we could improve the capabilities of one of our platforms. And what we had done is a heuristic approach where we said, okay, you know, here are the things we're trying to do in this system. How have other companies solved for that? And we would take those concepts, those design principles, and we would cast them in the light of our system and see what worked and what didn't. And when we were going through this study, we actually found that a lot of people were saying, well, actually, there's something missing here. There, you know, and the example came up was a chatbot, actually. You know, I'm trying to use this system to get information that I need to do my job, and, you know, browse isn't working for me. Why isn't browse working? Well, I don't really know what I'm looking for. Search isn't working for me because I don't really know, like, the name of what the thing is. So this is analogous to a user journey where I have a project in my house, let's say. I want to improve, you know, my bathroom. I go to the hardware store and I'm not really sure where to begin. I want to have a dialogue with somebody about, you know, what are the things I might need to consider, and then they can help me sort through, like, oh, maybe you need to check out aisle 9, which has plumbing, and, you know, aisle 10 has lighting fixtures. So we found this space for a gap, actually, that none of us had anticipated, that really our users brought to light, not necessarily by saying, hey, this is the feature I want, but, you know, highlighting this use case around, you know, needing something that was different than maybe the traditional context of browse or search, but something a little bit more conversational.
And Jessica, I mean, when you're kind of thinking about how to design some product or service, how do you work out, if you like, what you can actually shape yourself versus what the sort of technology platforms you're using will do? Because, you know, you were showing the examples of what EY is doing now, and the, you know, the way there's quite a lot of integration with different Microsoft services and so on, and there are things that it, you know, the technology is increasingly able to do things. How do you work out which things you can sort of make an impact on?
I mean, it's tricky, you know, because this technology is, like, always shifting. And so one minute you think you know how, you know, Microsoft Teams work, and then they'll release something new, and that just kind of blows everything out of perspective. I think it's that there's definitely an element of, like, spending some time using the tool yourself and figuring out, like, what can I do here. It's been particularly interesting for me as a newbie, kind of coming in, getting used to...
How long have you been in EY?
I kind of started, when did I start? March? Yeah, mm-hmm. March this year. So it's been an interesting time of change in terms of tooling. I've been kind of seeing what Microsoft Teams is doing, and how it's kind of changing kind of communication to a more kind of real-time chat model. And so it's now when I'm designing, I'm purposely thinking about how will we integrate with Teams and some of the teaming that's going on within Teams as well. Because now you no longer have, like, 800 people on a CC'd on an email. You have, like, specific tailored groups that you're collaborating on projects. So, like, thinking about how it's a lot of thinking about integration, asking with developers what's going on. A lot of it is kind of assuming that we might have kind of technology constraints. What are those constraints? So then we can work around them. There's a lot of problem solving from it.
And were you working in an enterprise environment before?
Yeah, so I've kind of done a few different bits. I used to work for ADP, and I've actually also worked for a kind of music production company. So I've kind of seen it from the corporation perspective, big corporation and the smaller corporation perspective. And each environment is different. It's hard to just place one.
And it strikes me that it feels like the enterprise technology environment is going through a very innovative period. You know, that there are new kind of tools coming along that you're not quite... Is this... What is this? Is this real-time communication? Is it a document sharing system? And, you know, it's really quite...
all the above, right?
Yeah.
It's a strange time. I mean, and there's so many more tools now than, you know, there ever was. So there's a proliferation of tools. It's almost overwhelming. I think the strategy is trying to figure out what combination of those allows me to get work done. At the end of the day, I think our people are really focused on, you know, how do I be productive?
Yeah.
And if I have to use 16 different things, that's probably not, you know, the right answer. But figuring out what is that right mix of things that I need to use to get my job done.
I think it's also about being flexible enough in what you're doing and what tool you could use to do it. So I just have that.
Is there anything you've worked on so far or seen inside EY and you thought, that's a really excellent way of doing things, that's very satisfying?
I'm enjoying Teams a lot. I've been enjoying like the way that the kind of the channel model, and I know that's new to the firm, so I think we do a cool job with our user research. We've got a great team, and I think in order to kind of get enough kind of data points and get enough interviewers, we actually work with some of our employees. We get them trained as interviewers themselves, and I think the kind of side benefit of that is that it develops kind of context and understanding in a way that is not quite the same as if you just like presented a deck of research findings. So that's something that I haven't seen that before at EY, and it's been really great to kind of democratize that kind of research process.
And to what extent is the leadership on board with what you're doing? Is this seen as a really important area for the organization? Is it seen as a cost? What's the kind of mindset?
I think the mindset is that, you know, definitely we've got good support, and that there needs to be an emphasis on, you know, data-driven decision-making. So there's certainly been an investment in our leadership team in terms of standing up user research functions. I don't know how many organizations take it so seriously that they're actually willing to staff people towards it. You know, not just, you know, using a consulting company, but actually standing up your own and really kind of treating it as a dedicated function. You know, this isn't a hobby that we're going to do on a one-off basis because we're kicking off a project. This is something that is just part of the fundamental way in which we look at our products and services and how we continue to evolve them as they move through their natural life cycle.
And do you feel this is changing the EY brand?
Another good question that's hard to answer. I hope it is.
I'm trying to come up with questions that I feel you probably can't answer.
It's a tough one. I mean, I think, you know, hopefully what people experience with EY is something that, you know, lasts a lifetime. And I know that sounds probably kind of corny. But I think if we equip them with the right capabilities to help them grow in their professional goals, you know, they obviously help the company as well. So, and other companies that they're working with as part of their, you know, client service work. So, I do think that, you know, being appreciative of them and being empathetic for what it is that they're trying to do and delivering them a more tailored experience to get those things done, I think it matters. We'll have to see. I know EY has, you know, been on the top, you know, companies to work for many years now. So I don't know if we can selfishly attribute that to the work that's being done around some of the technology and digital experiences. But I have to imagine it contributes to some degree.
And what do you think the kind of role for the non-digital connection is inside the organization? You know, there's been a sort of debate as to where, you know, what place does that, what is the physical connection and where how important is that in the workplace?
I personally think the physical connection is very important at certain times. So when you're joining, onboarding, that's something that I've been really appreciative of working at EY, is I've been able to like hang out with Chase and the team and get to know everyone's strengths and weaknesses and kind of collaborate together. I think that's helped kind of get stuff done.
The flexibility is key. There's two interesting stories I'll tell on this particular topic. One is that we're finding people really appreciate a flexible work type of environment. So when you're looking for talent, being able to say, well, we have flexibility that if you want to work from home, actually, even if it sounds like an insignificant thing, it's actually very significant. People are coming to expect increasingly greater levels of flexibility. They want to be able to spend, you know, more time with their family. They're more focused on a work-life balance. And Paul, as you mentioned earlier today, thinking about your day being, you know, bookend with a commute that involves stress and, you know, all of those challenges, being able to have the optionality of having that off the table has been, you know, really impactful. On the flip side, though, another interesting thing that we've learned, actually part of recent user research that we've done, we found some of our more junior resources who've come into the organization find a lot of value in being in the office and having those in-person connections with other people. I mean, so much of our workforce actually spend most of their time at a client location if they're client serving. So the 1 or 2 days a week where they may not have to, they'll go out of their way to be in the office to build those physical connections and to grow their network and gain knowledge, you know, outside of the digital space. So I don't think it's digital alone. I think it's actually this combination of the physical and digital.
No, and I think that's absolutely right. And we found that in DWG. You know, it depends on what stage people's lives are at as well. You know, if they've got young families, you know, they've got a partner who's working as well, then that flexibility becomes really important. Frankly, if they're living at home with a mum and dad, you know, because they can't afford to move out yet, then actually working from home is not a great idea.
That's not what they want.
And actually, I find that with the sort of youngest age group, they actually like, you know, that structure as well. And I feel there's a kind of, I don't know about a resurgence, but a greater appreciation of the physical connection in the digital world. And it's the digital does give you that kind of flexibility. So one of the questions I like to end with is just to ask you, what's a perfect working day for you? What does that look like, Jessica?
Perfect working day. Well, I wake up and can't start a day without coffee. and I'll probably... maybe just check what my to-do list is going to be, figure out what my calendar is looking like for the rest of the day. Then I'll probably jump on a few calls with my team.
And you're based in LA?
I'm based in LA, yes. So mm-hmm. Much of my team are based on the East Coast. So I have a few kind of morning calls, and then we jump. I'll have like some nice thinking time, if you like, in the afternoon to kind of get in and depending on what I'm doing, just get my head around some of the kind of action points from meetings early on in the day. So I've definitely found that to be a great kind of balance. And obviously I work remotely, so I don't have the commute time. So and throughout the day I'm just pinging people on Teams.
And it sounds like you're sort of using the time zone and saying, well, this is where I am. The people I'm working with are either, you know, let's say more on the East Coast or in Europe. So you've kind of, in a way, you kind of do the busy stuff in the morning and
yes,
then you
yeah.
kind of, yeah. And what's a perfect working day for you, Chase?
You know, I like a mix. I definitely like to start with coffee.
Right.
And probably end with
where are
as
you,
well.
Where are you located?
I'm based out of Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay.
So I'm on the East East Coast of, mm-hmm. of the States.
Yeah.
And I similarly have a situation where in the mornings I'm on a lot of meetings, which I actually like. I like to be in meetings where we're kind of problem solving and making decisions. But I do like to have time and space within the day for, you know, individual thought, reflection, and doing some strategy work. I think having that blend of both, you know, group kind of collaboration, as well as kind of offline time to kind of contemplate, think, and really do some actual creation of
deep work.
Yeah. Deep work. Yeah, that's the word. Where was that? Yeah, rather than shallow work, because who would want to work shallow? Well, it's been great to talk to you both, and thank you so much, Chase and Jessica, for your time and for coming out. And now we can head over for the drinks.
Sounds
not coffee,
good.
But something
yeah,
a bit more
have a beer.
Intensive.
Cool.
Digital Workplace Impact is produced by the Digital Workplace Group, a strategic partner and boutique consultancy supporting more than 100 leading businesses and public institutions to advance their intranets and broader digital workplaces through benchmarking, research and practitioner expertise. For more information, visit digitalworkplacegroup.com. And if you'd like to listen to previous episodes of the show, go to digitalworkplacegroup.com/DWG_podcast. This is Paul Miller wishing you well until next time.